Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your mandatory water cutbacks of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
What if I pick you up from your house? We should get out. We haven't talked in a while. We should roll to see where it goes. I saw potential in you from the go. You know that I did. I don't know if you know, but I know who you are. You could be big as Madonna. Just get in the car and then let's touch the road. Don't make other plans. Say you get up early, you work for the man.
Ayo, okay. That was Drake's Madonna. And if you all don't know, music festivals are popping right now. It is April, the weather is breaking, and it is time to gather in a field and hang out with your friends, or maybe people who are not your friends, and enjoy being near people who like music.
Music?
Well, you maybe don't need to like music, but you should at least be near people who like music. That seems like a good way to spend 3 days. Madonna. Madonna is a song by Drake. Madonna is also a person. Depending on the type of person you are, at Coachella, which happened last weekend, a Madonna-related thing happened. If you were a type of person that enjoyed music, Drake performed the song Madonna.
You asked me to come to this conversation. Was that a mistake?
Yes.
Well, okay, because like,
I'm going to tell you.
Was Juliana Rancic busy? Or
she is not answering my texts anymore.
Some chill bro who interns at a tequila company.
Here's the thing.
They might be able to talk about Coachella better than a music critic.
Here's the thing. After I wrote mean things about Fashion Police, she just will not call me back. So, you know, I'm working on that relationship. Ben Ratliff is here. John Pareles is here.
Hey.
Squad is way up today. I think, Ben, what you are trying to say as a person who just came back from Coachella, who just returned from the war, is that the person for whom the Drake Madonna experience was most exciting because of the lip lock that they shared got more out of Coachella than the person who thinks Drake performing the song Madonna is interesting. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Watching that occur in real time was supremely mundane and unremarkable, because I think everybody standing there watching it understood that it wasn't for their benefit in a way. It was for the after effect. It was for the after image.
Do it for the gram.
Even this, you know, cheeky, semi-surprising thing that happened wasn't that stimulating.
And this takes place, it's worth noting, this is the end of day three in the desert.
Yeah.
By this point, even the most turned up Coachella attendee is probably
winding down, maybe
ready to just, you know, hop in the Wrangler and just head on back to the valley.
I think Drake was winding down too.
True story.
His performance had that vibe.
So your piece, which you wrote in the wake of Coachella, you wrote two pieces, really. You wrote a series of blog posts that sort of documenting what was happening as it was happening, and which I thought overall kind of had a tone of kind of like, hey, things are happening here. Cool people are playing. And then by what I imagine was the end of night three or the morning after, on the fourth day, fatigue had truly seeped in. I felt you wanted to tell the world, it is time that we reassess what we expect of a thing like this.
Well, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. It's just a job. And I have written about this before reviewing Coachella, that it sort of exists on two dimensions. There's the present moment, and then there's the after image or the representation on cell phones and social media and whatever, because it's just intensely that way. So that's not a new subject.
Have you considered wearing more fringe?
You know, it's amazing that people fell for all that. That's what I thought, you know? I mean, now that H&M has a line, a Coachella line, and other retailers too, I think, the womanly appearance at Coachella is so monolithic. It's just incredible. How do all these thinking people fall for it?
These independent, rock-minded people.
I mean, you know.
All of those words are lies.
Each
of those words individually is a lie.
All these people are thinking. They're all thinking. They had to think to, you know, press the button to buy the ticket.
Our friend got him in.
I expect better from people.
Come on. Their friend's sister's, like, ex-boyfriend is, like, Drake's third road manager. Come on. Yeah. They didn't think that hard.
Yeah.
John Pareles is here. And I think John Perales also recently came back from a big festival, South by Southwest, which is slightly different as a festival. It's a little bit more business-oriented. It's a little bit more blatantly corporate as opposed to Coachella,
well,
which
there are about
is
a thousand
subliminally
more bands
corporate.
Too.
Sure. Ben, this is your eighth year at Coachella. Mm. JP, this is your what year at South by?
I think we call it umpteenth.
Yeah, there's those words have not many languages.
20 plus.
Many languages do not have the words for the amount of times John Perales has covered South by Southwest. We're still working on that. Tell me what was going on this year, and especially in wake of what happened last year at South by Southwest, and then let's talk a little bit about where that festival is heading.
Well, this year South by Southwest walked it back a little bit. Last year was the corporate curdling, was the Lady Gaga for the snack chip contest winners concert. This year there weren't as many giant Bigfoot spotlight stealing acts. So it was kind of a little more back to bands you might want to discover there, which was a relief.
Did you consume any snack chips?
I don't consume snack chips.
Just as a matter of course.
Yeah.
So you're impervious to that sort of marketing.
Well, I mean, I was in Texas. There were...
there are other things to eat in Texas.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Unawares.
I actually went and saw Baby Bands, and mm-hmm. I could have seen... Baby Bands plus. I could have seen Baby Bands on their fifth album instead of Baby Bands on their third album. Mm-hmm. I could have seen Laura Marling, who I missed there because I knew I would see her in New York and I know who she is. Mm-hmm. But there were good bands playing there. Angel Olsen played there. There was some serious music going on there. There was also a lot of standing outside the door of serious music because they're all in two small places, mm-hmm. which of course give you bragging rights on social media. I mean, South by Southwest, as you said, Ben, is its own representation too. It's all about getting that YouTube SXSW tag out there.
In that sense, though, is there part of South by Southwest that's actually about scarcity despite its scale?
Well, there's definitely bragging rights. I mean, I saw Kate Tempest in that little room, okay? And you're going to see her in a bigger place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always about that. It is about being there first, seeing the small gig, the underplay, mm-hmm. but it's also about this crazy abundance of musicians. There are literally 2,000 bands that play there, and even if, wow, say, 1,631 of them are dreadful, there's still too many to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was always chopping my hour into three segments and trying to catch three bands, and ending up at the door of one of them where the fire marshal had closed down the place because it was too full.
You enjoy this?
Yes.
Why?
Well, it's a tasting menu.
I want to bring myself into this. I've covered Coachella in the past, in the 1 year that you took off. Mm-hmm. I found it deeply unpleasant. Mm. I've covered South by Southwest in the past, not any time recently. I found it deeply unpleasant. Tell me why you like it, JP.
Well, it's great for attention deficit disorder. I mean, it's nice to hear a band for 20 minutes and move on and not feel like... that's the only thing you're going to see that night, not feel you have to see anymore, maybe. It also turns into this, this probably happens to you, Ben, at Coachella, too. You start seeing so many bands that your reflexes get really fine-tuned. I don't want to stick around for this set, or I do want to stick around for this set.
Yeah.
It becomes this really Darwinian battle of the bands. Mm-hmm. And that's
and there's value in that.
It's better than American Idol. I still like the feeling of knowing that there is so much music out there that people are passionate about making. And it's not a commercial proposition for a lot of these people. They're never going to make a bunch of money. They're really doing it because they care. And you can still feel that once the Kanye West and the Jay-Z's have decamped, as they pretty much did this year.
Mm. And that's something that festival can achieve because of its scale. There's going to be so much that's pre-commercial, for
yeah,
lack of a better
exactly.
way of putting it. And I thought... although it's interesting, Joe Coscarelli, our music reporter, he wrote a piece about a band that was paying its way to South by Southwest.
Right.
But you got the sense that, like, even this band, which is sort of a pre-commercial band, was sort of like, we're here for the commercial opportunities.
Well, of
like,
course.
That's why we came.
It's
nice that John Perales is here. But, like, what we really hope is that, like, some music supervisor is here and, like, mm-hmm. cut us a $2,000
sure.
Yeah,
check.
But it's never art versus commerce. They're always tangled. They're always mm-hmm. in this, you know, painful embrace. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, capitalism has given us the music we love.
Sure. No Marxism here. At least no, not basic Marxism, at least.
I'm not going the purist route either, but it's fun to see all these people doing it. It's fun to see all these people bumping into each other, just watching the whole social interaction mm-hmm. of bands on many levels, you know, seeing each other for the first time.
Is this thing that that John's talking about, where there is this kind of space that exists in a, almost like a pre-commercialized or a slightly more obscure wing of South by Southwest that you can still kind of have, for lack of a better way of putting it, like a true music discovery experience. Is that just not available at Coachella anymore, do you think?
It wasn't to me this year. I suppose it could happen. I mean, generally the feeling, the tenor of Coachella is these were South by Southwest hits maybe 2 years ago.
Of the, like, the cooler bands, quote
of
unquote.
Of the cooler bands.
Yeah, the cooler bands.
And then there's the super popular things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also like it's more than 50% electronic music.
Yeah, that's sort of like a weirdly little discussed aspect of Coachella.
Yeah,
and I think it's little discussed because, to be honest, the average person from our world who goes and covers it honestly can't tell the difference between David Guetta and DJ Snake and Alesso or whoever. They just don't spend a lot of time on it.
That's right.
It's just not something that makes up a vast majority of what we do in work.
Well,
so I think a lot of times that stuff's weirdly underreported, but certainly when I've been to Coachella, those tents are
the Sahara
almost
tent
steadily the most full.
Is a constant party.
Yeah.
And it's overspilling. It's wildly loud.
Yeah.
It's crazy rowdy. It has those vibes of like, don't come in here unless you know what you're doing and you're prepared to stay. You know, like you got to be in for a pound. Walking past that and like getting near it and hearing enough to hear what I heard and then move on. Those can be like serious experiences. Even listening to DJ Snake for a while, that was so loud that it was kind of avant-garde.
I believe, sure. I had a similar experience with Hardwell in that tent to the point where the year I went, I mean, this may happen every year, but there were like huge dust storms on the last night.
Yeah.
And I almost bought a Hardwell hoodie. Not just because I needed a hoodie, but because I was like, I am ready to pledge my allegiance to Hardwell.
Right.
This guy who is not subtle.
Yeah.
This guy is not, there's no finesse really, but I was ready. I was in the zone.
Right.
So these are our music festivals. They're abundant. In many ways, they're repetitive. Throughout the rest of the summer, there will be Bonnaroo and Governor's Ball and like all these sort of big, what fundamentally becomes a traveling carnival of a big tent music experience that is perhaps less about the bands on the stage and more about giving 30,000 kids a sanctioned place to wild out for a couple days. Ben, you also recently covered a very different sort of festival. You were in Knoxville, Tennessee for Big Ears, which in many ways is the complete opposite of what we're talking about and represents a different impulse in festival promotion. So tell me a little bit about Big Ears.
Well, it's run by Ashley Capps, who is a big festival promoter nationwide, and he's one of the people behind Bonnaroo. His business is based in Knoxville, Tennessee, and he controls, manages the two great old theaters in the town, the Tennessee and the Bijou. A festival like this couldn't happen if not for that fact. You know, he's a big wheel in the town. He controls the theaters. So this is his plaything. And from way back, he's like a you know, avant-garde music, modern classical music, experimental music guy. And so that's what he's created there, that kind of music.
In a town where there doesn't seemingly had not previously been an appetite for something of this scale.
No. For a lot of people, you know, they have never seen these acts, let's call them.
It's funny to call
like Terry Riley an act. But it's a lot of people in Knoxville had
hashtag Terry Riley. Hashtag NC.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people had in Knoxville presumably had not seen Terry Riley before. What they do is they publicly represent themselves as this very sophisticated festival, and they get a kind of major domo of modern classical experimental music to kind of anchor it, Steve Reich or Philip Glass or Terry Riley or whatever. But then they also will book semi-popular indie bands to sell tickets. This year it was Toon Yards and Swans and a couple other people.
How do you prepare yourself differently for that festival than for Coachella? Because by my measure, they're equally grueling. It would seem that they're equally grueling. But how do you prepare yourself differently?
A festival like Big Ears, which has its faults, I'm not going to say it's perfect, is a lot easier to get through because you can get inside those listening experiences much more. You can get into a beautiful theater, sit in a seat. It's all festival seating, but you can always find a seat. It's all music that is meant to be immersive. I mean, this is like the festival with no rubric. It has no stated festival with no theme, mm-hmm. kind of, you know,
but without portfolio.
Without, yeah, something like that. But it's all music that is immersive, basically. And so that's what you're there for, and you do it. And at least twice a day, you have a really good experience for more than 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Does it mean something different when Kendall Jenner throws up her middle finger at Big Ears mm-hmm. than it did at Coachella?
Oh, you're making a joke, because she would never go to Big Ears, is what you're saying.
Or maybe she would have a different reason to throw her middle finger up.
I just want to talk about that for 30 seconds.
Let's.
At Coachella, the rapper Tyler, the Creator, did a set. Wasn't a very good set. I suppose that's beside the point. But Kendall Jenner was in the front. Tyler did this very interesting and legit thing where he, in between songs, sort of surveyed the VIP area and said, you know, you guys are boring and fake and I can't stand you, and insulted Kendall Jenner. Kendall Jenner responded with middle finger and smile, and this thing became the most remarked upon event of Coachella.
Actually, next year they're going to have a hologram of Kendall
Jenner. Yeah, yeah. So, like,
at every stage, just throwing up middle finger.
Now, that interaction,
I'd like to see that festival.
That interaction was representative, symbolically important. I'm glad that it happened. I'm not mad about it at all.
Mm-hmm. Not a great musical experience.
No, though. Not a great musical experience. I don't know about a music critic flying across the country to see that. Not sure about that. But
it depends what you think of music.
But it depends what kind of music critic.
If you're the type of person who sends me weird reader emails telling me that rap isn't music,
yeah.
Then like, yeah, the music critic who writes back and is like, totally, bro, I know.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, that music critic, maybe no.
Sure.
But like for myself, that yeah. actually sounds like a tremendously fun thing to write about. And I thought you had a tremendous amount of fun writing about that moment in your piece.
Unfortunately, you could have experienced it with plugs in your ears and written about it that way, too.
Speaking of earplugs, let's hear a little bit of music from a band that played the Big Ears Festival. Let's hear a little bit of Z's.
Yes.
Okay, so that was Z's, a song called Core, off their new album. One must have, I presume, extremely big ears to appreciate all the myriad musical impulses of a band like Z's. So a music critic should fly to Knoxville, Tennessee to see a band like
well,
Z's.
Well, you can see Z's in Brooklyn, too.
You can fly to Brooklyn.
Yeah. I mean, Z's, I suppose, was representative of like a new band at Big Ears, and they played in a new club. It was the right space, the right acoustics, the right loudness. Energy was good. It was just a great performance, you know? And there was something very easygoing about it, too. It was easy to get in and out. You could hear it on its own terms mm-hmm. without a whole lot of other stuff getting in the way.
That's something that I think a lot of the spaces that we as critics cover festival-wise are explicitly designed against. And like we were talking about before we started recording, you know, over the summer, we are going to have Governor's Ball. We are going to have Bonnaroo, which we are not covering Bonnaroo this year. So a thing that I want to talk about is why we collectively decide to cover festivals.
Yeah.
And maybe why that might be something worth revisiting. And mm-hmm. it's something we are, I think, actively revisiting. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk, first of all, let's talk about the decision about Bonnaroo. JP, you have been a Bonnaroo stalwart since before Max Yazger, as far as since he went over to Tennessee and just opened that whole farm. And yet not this year, if I'm
not
right.
Not this year, not last year.
Not last year.
But the reason is the headliners, basically. Mm-hmm. Last year was Elton John and I believe Lionel Richie. I did not want to fly to Tennessee and stand in potential mud for 3 days to see Elton John and Lionel Richie. Mm-hmm. This year it's Billy Joel, who is from our own little sweet hometown.
Sure. Plays once a month at Madison Square Garden, best I can tell. So
I'm torn about Bonnaroo, actually, because the fun part of Bonnaroo is the undercard, is all the little bands. And they still, although many of them are overlapping Governor's Ball, another reason I'm not going, because Governor's Ball is in my backyard.
Yes.
Bonnaroo does still have the vestiges of its jam band roots. Mm-hmm. And it also has its Tennessee flavor, its country bluegrass feeling. And the undercard is really interesting at Bonnaroo.
The true Bonnaroo.
You and your like true false dichotomies.
I'm just saying.
So I'm torn, but I'm not going to go see Billy Joel in Tennessee when he's playing in Madison Square Garden.
And yet, this is a decision that you can live with, obviously. It's the second year running. I think when a new festival comes onto the circuit of this scale, you know, our immediate instinct is like, well, we should be there. It's important. Mm-hmm. We cover music. This is a big thing that's happening. A lot of money is being put into it. A lot of creative energy, theoretically, and a lot of fans are going to show up. At what point does that scale tip where it's not that important? Because I know you're not going to Bonnaroo. You and I, Ben and I, have had conversations about Coachella and whether we might be past the sell-by date on
But the thing is with Coachella is it's the Iowa caucuses. It's the first one of the
season. So it's harder to skip.
I mean, presages what's to come.
That's true. Although often when we say that, we say it based on the fact that it's first tour date for a lot of people.
Yep.
In this case, I'm not so sure. Like, I kept looking at people's schedules, and it was not the first tour. It's just another stop.
Yeah, I always find it weird when I see someone put out a tour listing, and then they're like, their New York stop is Governor's Ball, or their California stop is Coachella. I'm like, that's not really a tour stop.
Yeah.
It's sort of a weird, convenient cover.
But after the winter months, people really like to all of a sudden open the paper and see a picture of, you know, shirtless youths or tank-topped youths exulting in the sun. You see one of those pictures, you've seen them all.
That's true.
And Coachella is the first big reason to run those photos.
It's the crocus.
By the way, this is a slightly photo-driven assignment.
Is that okay? Okay. It's a slideshow? It's a slideshow? Mm-hmm. So you just wrote a 1,000-word caption for a slideshow? Is that what you're saying?
You phrased it more strongly than I would have.
That's why I'm here.
But yes, I'm going to say one other thing about Coachella, and also about Bonnaroo too. This goes for Bonnaroo too.
Yeah.
You know, the real headliners on the biggest stage at night, 9 or 10 o'clock or whatever, those sound systems are incredibly dope.
Yeah,
and to be able to hear music with that detail in the open air is an incredible treat.
I weirdly had that experience 1 year listening to Animal Collective at the Pitchfork Festival, which is not a sentence that I ever in life thought I would say.
But that is a
real thing that happened to me when at that festival.
Yeah.
No, the main stage of Bonnaroo is like having headphones on. Astonishing.
Yeah.
And an interesting – I was reading both your pieces, Ben, back to back. There's an interesting common thread through your Big Ears coverage and your Coachella coverage. Mm. What is the opening of your Coachella piece? But Jack White – bleeding to the crowd about how sacred music is.
Right.
And there is something about people's pilgrimage to Indio.
Right.
That has the quality of the sacred.
Yes. And I would never deny that. You know, as much as we might want to make fun of, you know, hipsters and club bros and whatever. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would never deny that.
And I think those people are seeking in their way something similar to what your avant-garde music fans are seeking at Big Ears.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah.
A lot of sacredness amongst both camps. But there's a lot of festivals this summer. Mm. I'm not trying to go to all of them. Mm-hmm. Let's just be honest. JP, you're probably going to cover Governor's Ball, would be my guess.
Yep.
I'll probably cover Farnborough, which is the new country festival on the Governor's Ball property, which I think is like in August or September. And because of that, I'm probably not going to cover one of the weird Midwestern country festivals. I'm personally more excited about smaller and weirder festivals. I feel like certainly after doing this job for a long time, you can't help but want to seek them out. JP, I know you cover Moogfest quite often. Last year I was at Pickathon. I may go back this year. There's something in the Arizona desert in May that I'm thinking of covering.
Well, I have to say, as a writer, it's a lot easier to have to cover a festival that has a story in it than a festival that's a big shopping mall like Lollapalooza.
But also not just a story, but also like a palpable energy amongst between performer and observer.
Yeah. A sense of community, as you would
say. Yeah, I mean, this is I'm reminded of when I went to Monterey a few years ago when Todd P threw on the MTY MX festival, which was like sort of like a fail of epic proportions. Mm-hmm. You know, bands just didn't show, like half the bands didn't show up. Kids were sleeping with no tent. I mean, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
But when it hit right and the light, you know, the stars were coming up over the mountains and Dan Deacon was diving in the middle of the crowd and like urging everybody, you're like, oh, this doesn't happen at Governor's Ball. This doesn't happen. And I find the longer I do this, the hungrier I am for some kind of tactile moment that feels like I could have only gotten it in that place that moment.
It's a funny thing when performers come out into the audience and do that and do it well.
Yep.
At Coachella on the big stage, you can't really do it because there's this big barrier between the performer and the audience.
It's called the photo pit.
Yeah. Yes. Twice I saw people get up to it and like basically hurl themselves at it and like jump up and sort of like get halfway over the fence. One was Action Bronson.
Sure, that's one of his shticks. Yeah.
Who like I don't know. He did it again.
Yeah.
You know, he knows how to do this. And the other was Florence from Florence and the Machine, who actually broke her foot when she jumped off the stage. But in those moments, there was this sense of like, I want to reach you. You know, I want to make something happen. Mm-hmm. You could read it as coming out of a sense of frustration.
Let's talk about the Knicks.
Uh-huh.
So the New York Times covers many things. We cover world politics. We cover Coachella. And we cover sports. We cover the Knicks. And anyone who follows basketball this year knows very, very well that the Knicks are doo-doo. They are post-criticism doo-doo. There's not a lot you can say about them. And our sports department, in their eminent wisdom and humor, decided to send their Knicks beat reporter on a vision quest, basically. The column, I believe, was called Not the Knicks. So for a few weeks, he was covering, what, AAU basketball, Pee Wee Leagues, I don't know, basketball in Toronto, like, well, anywhere. Anywhere where there was interesting basketball being played that was better than the Knicks, that's where he went for a few weeks.
Bold move from our
very, very bold. And I remember you sent me an email, I think it was in between Big Ears and Coachella, basically saying, should we do this? And by that point, it was probably too late to do that, but I think the question stands. Should we do that? Not just because we don't want to see the same things over and over again, but because in a sense, taking a stand against grand scale festival culture, or at least saying that it may have reached its logical peak or endpoint, is inherently a worthwhile critical position.
I'll just repeat again that, you know, what happened between Tyler and Kendall was important.
And it could have only happened at a festival of that scale and of that nature.
Right. And to take—
And that close to L.A.
Right.
Yes.
And to take Kendall Jenner or someone like that out of the understanding of pop music as it is now is wrong.
But
what comes next?
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us. Speak your truth. Speak your truth.
But I really do. I really do feel that—
Come to daddy. Come to daddy. Come to daddy. Come on.
I feel profoundly mixed about the usefulness of covering Coachella and
Times. Festivals like that.
And festivals, yeah.
Of that nature. I don't think it's particular. It doesn't seem like it's particular. JP, what about you? Do you feel that there is ongoing utility in aggressive coverage of festivals of that scale with what we do? The people sitting at this table.
I think it's worth doing one per summer, and it's probably going to end up being Coachella because they've got the first mover advantage. You might be going again next year, Ben. I might go back. You never know. But to then keep doing a repetition of the festival in Delaware, in Tennessee, in Michigan, wherever, the returns diminish fast. And we have Governor's Ball here now. I think Spin did that fantastic diagram of the overlap of Governor's Ball, Bonnaroo, and Coachella. It's like a big Venn diagram and
sure,
a lot
sense.
Of overlap. So newspaper-wise, we should do one. We should do the one that we feel is most emblematic. to go to Firefly, to go to Sasquatch.
It's not necessary.
But what I am always tempted to do as I look at all of the lists of festivals as they proliferate is to go to the little tiny curated ones, to go to Austin Psych Fest, now renamed Levitation after a 13th floor elevator song, or to go to Wilco's festival, to go to something that has a center to it, to go to something that's not just whatever band's itineraries intersected that weekend.
Right. Artist curated festivals would be cool too. If there were more of them other than the one you just mentioned.
For the last couple of years, I've wanted to go to Tyler's festival, the Golf Wing Carnival. Because, like, I think that's an interesting, you know, Drake has OVO Fest.
Yes.
Although it's less of a fest and more of just like a concentrated two nights of concerts. Those, I think, because they tell stories about artists and about influence.
Yes.
That's fascinating. Something like Austin Psych Fest tells stories about a region and about a way of thinking about music. Like I said, I'm curious about what it's like to experience music in the desert for 3 days, not the Indio Valley, not the Coachella Valley, but like this thing that's coming up in May, which I may go to. If Merle Fest wasn't next week, I would go to Merle Fest for 4 days. I think you can learn a lot about a genre with that kind of deep immersion that you just can't possibly get when most of those acts just never come to where we are.
Yeah.
America's still a big country. We still have to go places. And like when you go to Coachella, you go to LA for Coachella, or you go to Austin for South By, you're not experiencing Austin music. You're not experiencing California music. You're experiencing a way of experiencing music, but it doesn't tell you a local story necessarily.
No, you can do Coachella in an LA way,
and you can do South by Southwest in an Austin way.
You can, but it's hard, especially with with the demands of like what we are responsible for professionally. Maybe next year, not the Knicks.
Let's keep talking about it. We have to keep having this conversation.
JP,
I'm with you.
Right. Let us go out, because Ben Ratliff, you did have an authentic moment of musical comfort at Coachella.
You're right.
Well, it was the undercard. This is why you want to go to a festival.
The great thing at Coachella, after being around 90,000 people, is to find a show that no one is at.
Which still can happen. It's actually one of the real mystifying things about Coachella is that there can be 30,000 people on that field, and there can be a tent with 100 people.
And oddly, it was a show that was special. It was a reunion show of the 90s band Drive Like Jehu.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
very good band.
It was very good, and there were less than 50 people in the audience. It was toward the end of a night. I think it was just before the weekend.
It was sort of the intersection of your Coachella and Big Ears experiences.
Perhaps.
Kind of an overlap. So let's go out with some Drive Like Jehu. This is Luau. Okay, this has been the Popcast. Thank you, Ben Ratliff. Thank you, John Pareles. I've been your host, John Caramonica. Please subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. You can read Ben Ratliff on Coachella and Big Ears, and John Pareles on South by Southwest and Old Bonnaroos at nytimes.com/music. Our producers are Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and we will be back next week.